location where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
My name is Jim Roden. I first asked Walter Graham how he became involved in the whole area of fluoridation of water.
Well, originally, I guess it started back in, I think, 1991 or 92. They announced in our local paper that they were going to be putting this in the water supply. I was shocked because nobody had asked me. So what I did was I went out and I bought bottled water, 6 months supply of bottled water, just so that we could figure out a way of getting it out. And we had some time. They then announced that they couldn't do it in that year, that they would come back at it again because the pipes had to all be connected up so they could fluoridate us all at one time.
Right.
Otherwise they had to do region by region and it would take years. So they decided they would wait till they connected all the pipes. Then they came back in 1996 with a consultation period. I had, as a child, my father used to use sodium fluoride in the garage to kill mice. And I, you know, at the time they had put in our paper in America when I was a kid, I was about 11 years old, they put in the paper that they were going to put sodium fluoride in the water system. My father, being a logical thinker, said, he wrote to them and he said, this couldn't be the same sodium fluoride I use in the garage to kill mice and rats. And they wrote back and said, yes it is, but we're putting it in such small amounts it won't do you any harm. And my dad wrote back and said, but it doesn't do the mice any good. They don't even get to leave the plate. And so that was the first introduction we had. My dad was in a panic, but we were a working class family, couldn't get out of the way, and I don't know if our area even ever got fluoridated. I have no knowledge of whether it was fluoridated or not. Parts of New York definitely were, where I do come from. But then when I heard they were going to do this in Northern Ireland, I wasn't about to see them putting rat poison into the drinking water without even asking us. Then when the consultation period started up, I wrote in a letter to a local newspaper saying that nobody has any idea what this is going to do long term, that in 50 years' time it won't create cancer or that it won't do something else. And a dentist wrote in lambasting me, calling me all kinds of names and what a moron I was and so on. I then saw that there was somebody else wrote in to the paper defending me. And I called him up to say thank you, and he turned out that he was going into the councils and speaking against this at councils, and he asked me to come with him and do it as well because they had not enough people to go around all the councils. So I agreed, I went in, I sat through one council meeting, and it was actually in Craigavon in Northern Ireland. At the end of the meeting, people turned to me, the councillors, and I don't know why, I think it was the American accent, and they said, what do you think of this? And I said, I think this is pure madness. I said, you know, in a year, you know, it used to be in Ireland when you tripped over a paving stone, you got up and dusted yourself off and you went home. Now you don't. You get a solicitor and a barrister and you sue the hell out of somebody. I said, this is a litigious community we have now, and I don't think you should be doing this because you're leaving yourself open to massive litigation here. I said, for what? What benefit are we talking about? There's a possibility of cancer and there's no benefit here that I can really see. So they then backed down. These people asked me then to go to other councils, which I did do. And then we, as a group of small citizens, there was only a handful of us, went through every council in Northern Ireland on the same night as the dentists. And we gave an anti-point of view. At the end of it, we had 25 out of 26 councils against it. We also had the four area health and social services councils, which are the watchdog agencies for the health board. They all voted against it. We had the large civil servants union, NIPSA, vote against it. We had the two farmers unions vote against it. We had Queen's Students Union vote against it. We had the Vegetarian Society against it. We had the Angling Federation against it. And we had Shorts, the big aerospace industry, threatened to pull out of Northern Ireland if this went ahead. So we had a huge opposition in just 3-4 months of a consultation period.
And that was simply by bringing attention to a subject that wasn't really well known about.
No, nobody had a clue. And I think the illusion was because it's in toothpaste and you put it in your child's mouth at night, it's perfectly safe. Because who would believe that fluoride is more toxic than lead and only marginally less toxic than arsenic. And like lead and arsenic, it's a cumulative poison. Nobody would have believed that.
Well, there's so many products in our daily lives and indeed in our homes and in our food that we take for granted because we see and use them every day. But looking at the video you just kindly showed me really made me realize, I realized from our first conversation that if fluoride was in the water, obviously then it's going to be in the any product that
That's
has
right.
to do with water.
The food chain.
Which is our cooking,
That's
which
right.
is everything, really.
Everything. Yeah. Well, once you put it in the water supply, you've now put it into your soup, it's in your beer, it's in every food or beverage that's prepared in that water supply. So you're not getting your one part per million anymore, not that you ever were, but you're getting an overdose. It's guaranteed.
One part per million is deemed to be a safe dose or... A dose that's acceptable. Well,
believe it or not, there's not one scientific study that backs up the one part per million. It's a guess. And it's a guess based on dental fluorosis, which is this white flecking and brown staining and pitting of developing teeth. At the point where a lot of it appears, they then cut back. And eventually when they got the one part per million, they accepted a certain number of children getting this as being an acceptable level. But there's no proof that there's any such thing as a safe level. And in fact, in London in 1998, Dr. Shishila came over from India, top doctor, top researcher in the world on fluorine chemistry, and she was able to say that there is no such thing as a safe level and that it's a non-essential element, that nobody should be getting it from any source, that if you had no fluoride in your entire life, you would be a perfectly healthy animal.
Why then? Would the authorities consider putting this poison into the system?
Well, there's the reason they say, and then there's the real reason. The reason they say is because it reduces tooth decay in adolescent children. It's statistical evidence, and nobody in their right mind would dose an entire population based on statistics. We're adults here. We all know that you can make statistics say anything. So to go ahead and drug an entire population against their will based on statistics collected by who? By the very dentists who are promoting this. It's illogical. I think it's even worse than that, because not only are there not statistics, when we asked Freedom of Information Act questions, we asked, is there any proof that the fluoride that's being put in is safe? There's no science backing up that the hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is what they're putting in your water supply, is even safe. We asked for proof that it was effective at reducing tooth decay. And the government had to admit that there was no proof that hydrofluorosilicic acid can reduce tooth decay in a human being. So we then asked for environmental impact studies. By golly, there's no environmental impact studies either. So you have no environmental impact studies, you have no proof of safety, you have no proof that it's even effective at reducing tooth decay in a human being.
Yes.
Then why are we doing this? The real reason is industry. Industry fund your government in different ways. And unfortunately, industry have a dumping problem here.
Yes.
This is a very toxic substance, and the stuff that they're putting in your water supply is hydrofluorosilicic acid, the most corrosive acid on Earth, and it is the toxic waste of the phosphate fertilizer industry. They have a problem with getting rid of it. Environmental laws prevent them from dumping it in the environment, so what do? They sell it to you, and you pass it through the community kidneys, and then you put it out in the environment where they're not allowed to put it. So they then turn garbage into gold. And I could give you an example of this would be in Canada in the St. Lawrence Seaway. There's an aluminium factory. They also produce toxic fluoride as well as a waste product. Now, they're only allowed to put out 36 tons each year into the St. Lawrence Seaway. Any more than that would kill every fish in the river. So what do? They produce another 150 tons of the fluoride. They sell it to Calgary for water fluoridation. And where does that all go? 99.9% of it goes into the St. Lawrence Seaway. They bypassed international law, they turned garbage into gold, and you pay for all the advertising, you take all the risks. They step back and they take none of this. And they get this stuff moved. That's how I see it. Now, and when I look at the illogic of what they're doing, I can see no other reason behind this. And I'll run through the figures with you. You're putting this in 100% of the water. You lose 40% of your water, according to your DOE in the Republic of Ireland, in underground leaks before you even get it. That means 40% of it goes out in the environment,
yes,
where it's not supposed to go. Out of the 60% that's left, industry uses 7/8 of the water supply. So that's 7/8 out in the environment where it's not supposed to go. Out of the 1/8 that comes into your house, you drink less than 1% of it. You wash your dishes, you wash your clothes, you take baths, you water the lawn, but you don't drink it. You flush the toilet. Now, out of the 1% of the that the population is actually drinking, how many children have the tooth problem here? 3% of the population have the tooth problem we're trying to cure. So you have 3% of the population drinking 3% of 1% of 1/8 of 60% of all the water you bother to fluoridate. Does this sound like a logical way to deliver a drug to a small target audience who have a tooth problem because they drink too many sugary fizzy drinks? Well, if they're drinking fizzy drinks, they're not drinking the water supply, so what's the point in putting it in for them? Now, that means that 99.9% of this went out in the environment. Now, who does it sound like we're doing this for? The 3% of the population who drink 3% of the 1% of the 1/8, or the 99.9% that goes out in the environment, which is industry needing to get rid of the toxic waste? Logically, it appears that we are getting rid of the toxic waste.
Talking of toxic waste and the environment, Walter, would you say any of this fluoridation, or how much of it, would be airborne as well as waterborne?
I don't think anybody's done any studies on it. It's evaporation, but I know they had a truck in Florida that was leaving the fluoride plant and being delivered to North Carolina for water fluoridation. And it didn't even get to leave the state because the acid, which can eat through stainless steel, concrete, it can eat through fiberglass, it can eat through glass, can only be contained by epoxy plastics. And they had a big tanker which had epoxy lining, and there was a pinhole in it. And the acid ate through the half-inch steel of the side of the truck. It dissolved the back axle off the truck and the tires, and the truck turned over and burst open, and it became an environmental nightmare for them. Now, they evacuated 2,000 homes around that truck because they were afraid of it becoming airborne, actually evaporating, and it would be a toxic cloud that would have killed people instantly. They then dug up 2.5 feet of concrete, and because it had been dissolved by the acid at this point, and they required everybody who had driven through the acid to report to a toxic control center, and a man in a spacesuit washed your car down. So they also had 50 people go to hospital who had even inhaled or touched the acid at all. Yes. So they closed Route I-4 for about a week while they had to repair the highway after this spill. And that's the exact same acid that's going into your water supply. The other thing that's amazing about this is that as citizens groups, we got some of the acid from a water treatment plant here in Ireland. And we had it tested independently at a lab in Dublin. And they found that it was contaminated with about 20 some odd contaminants, including arsenic, lead, antimony, phosphoric acid, chromium, boron. It had a lot of different contaminants in it, all of them carcinogenic, all of them cumulative poisons in their own right. And it also, we found out that it also has uranium-238 in it, which is what they make the bomb out of, because radioactive substances come from phosphate rocks just as fluoride does. So it has these contaminants. So you really have a toxic chemical nightmare here. They're not really adding fluoride. They're adding a lot of toxic chemicals all at the one time. And fluoride happens to be one of them, maybe one of the worst.
Yes. Toothpaste is probably the best known carrier or ingredient.
Delivery system.
Delivery
for fluoride.
System for fluoride.
That's
yeah.
Right.
In view of all this, what could people do, Walter, to... I would imagine every toothpaste is fluoridated. What could we do to change over? Obviously, there's no toothpaste without it. So what can we use to brush our teeth and clean our teeth effectively,
yeah,
as they say? And is toothpaste really necessary anyway?
Yeah, there's two things there you're raising. One is the toothpaste necessary? Well, I've read reports that no. In fact, the brushing itself stimulates saliva and actually cleans the teeth. It's not the toothpaste. The toothpaste is actually polishing. So it's not preventing cavities, it's buffing your teeth. And
yes.
And it's also wearing the enamel down. Because in the commercial toothpaste, there are abrasives. So it's actually wearing your enamel down. The other issue is, are there non-fluoridated? Yes, there are, but you have to go to health food stores. They have about 12 or 14 brands of non-fluoridated toothpaste in different flavors, herbal flavors. So you can get it. There is also, you can use baking soda. What did we do before we had fluoridated toothpaste? Farmers used baking soda for years. And now a lot of the leading brands of toothpaste have baking soda in them. So you can bypass the toothpaste manufacturers for a fraction of the price by using baking soda anyway. And baking soda, I would say, is probably better than toothpaste because it neutralizes acid and isn't the acid that's causing the cavities.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's got double benefits, and it's less abrasive than is toothpaste. So you're probably wearing your teeth down a little less.
So ordinary everyday baking powder would do that?
Baking soda.
Baking soda, sorry.
Not baking powder.
That's different.
Baking powder has aluminium in it, which is another substance you don't want to run into.
Baking soda.
So it's got to be baking soda.
Yes.
But it does. It cleans the teeth.
Yes.
Perfectly fine. As you even have said yourself, the actual brushing stimulates the immune system within the mouth and does the cavity fighting. If you didn't brush, I think, and you took the toothpaste into your mouth, I don't think there'd be any effect at all.
Right.
So it's the brushing that creates the effect.
Yeah, because in the animal kingdom, they don't have any even toothbrushes.
And they don't get cavities.
And they don't get cavities.
That's right. And the amazing thing is, you see, really, cavities are caused by sugar. Everybody knows that. You could ask a 3-year-old child and he'll tell you the cavities are caused by sugar. And putting fluoride in the water does not take away sugar, does it?
No.
So it doesn't cure the root cause of cavities.
That's it.
So cavities are not caused by a lack of fluoride any more than a headache is caused by a lack of paracetamol. So we have not addressed the main cause of cavities, which is sugar consumption. And until you take away the sugar consumption, you'll always have cavities. Because no amount of fluoride can prevent sugar from creating cavities. And I haven't seen dentists out canvassing in front of Tate and Lyle or Schweppes or Cadbury's or any of these people asking for warnings on their products about sugar, have we? Yet here they are forcing drugs into our water system which don't address the main issue of why cavities are created.
Yes. Well, it would be the obvious thing to, as you say, reduce the sugar and avoid it as much as possible.
That's right.
That would be the logic. But I suppose dentists are going to say, well, they're going to do this anyway, so we're going to go this route and try to educate people down that route. But it's like adding more than is necessary.
Well, it's an illusion, because what they're doing is they're not attacking the sugar industry. They're too big and powerful, aren't they? And they also subscribe to their dental journalism, helping them setting up their dental conferences. So they don't attack the sugar industry, which is the root cause of cavities in the first place. But in putting fluoride in the water, they give the illusion that you can take as much sugar as you like, because fluoride's there protecting you. And that means that children in fluoridated areas will probably take more sugar because their mother believes they're being protected by the fluoride.
Yeah, that's a really false sense of security.
Of course it is.
Yeah. And there was a question I was going to ask you. Yes, I got it back. How could we check on an individual, or is it possible to check on an individual level, the toxicity in our bodies? For instance, you can get like urine samples for
yes.
Proteins, etc.
That's right.
Is there any way of checking specifically for fluoride in our bodies?
Yes. Dr. Shishila, in India, if you go in with one irritable bowel symptom, your blood and urine, any doctor in the continent of India will automatically check your blood and urine for fluoride levels.
At the first signs of irritable bowel? Or
any symptom of irritable bowel. Because
how many symptoms of irritable bowel are they? Could you list them?
You'd have to give me a second for this
one. No problem.
There's nausea, loss of appetite, pain in the stomach, there's gas formation and bloated feeling, there's constipation followed by intermittent diarrhea, and there's headaches. That would constitute irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah, and doctors would say if you've one or two or three, the more on that list that you have, the more likelihood it is going to be diagnosed irritable bowel syndrome, isn't that?
Yes, that's right.
And then these things would not also be accumulated in 1, 2, 3, or 4 different symptoms, but also over a certain period of time, and then that will give a definite formal, we'd say, diagnosis of irritable bowel. But you know yourself, and I know also, that many people would have a lot of those symptoms on
That's
a regular
right.
basis.
Absolutely.
So what you're saying is, if we take out the fluoride, that would be a good indicator of how if we're susceptible to the fluoride. In other words, you're saying fluoride definitely causes a lot of those symptoms.
Well, Dr. Shishila is saying it, and she's proving it. She actually proved it with scanning electron microscopic shots of the GI tract up close. And she was able to show that it causes damage to the lining of the stomach and the intestines. And what happens is, as you bring in more fluoride, there's more damage. So at one part per million, you already have a certain proportion of the population demonstrating irritable bowel syndrome. And these people, and in the Republic of Ireland right now, you have one-fifth of the population have irritable bowel syndrome, according to the Irish Times in June of 98. And they said in the Times that they don't know why this is happening. Well, in India, they know exactly why it's happening. And as I say, they use it as an indicator, as a precursor to skeletal problems called skeletal fluorosis,
yes.
Which the only thing that can cause skeletal fluorosis and dental fluorosis is fluoride.
Yes.
Nothing else in the world can do this damage. And what they do is they, when somebody comes in and complains about irritable bowel, they automatically test the blood and urine, then they take them off of all fluoride, and in 10 to 15 days, with no drugs at all, it clears up for everybody.
Yes.
Then those people stay off of fluoride for the rest of their lives. And that way they avoid getting the skeletal problems that will appear later on. So that the dental damage that's done, the dental fluorosis, is just an indicator of skeletal damage.
Roughly how long would that fluorosis in the tooth appear before, would say, the more permanent damage, I would imagine? Well, that's permanent, but...
Yes.
How long would the... the time gap be between first seeing dental fluorosis in the teeth and skeletal damage taking place?
The skeletal damage has already taken place when you have the damage to the teeth.
So it's actually happening at the same time?
Yes. It's the exact same thing as whenever you have lead poisoning. You get a blue-black line that appears across your gums, and it's permanent. It's an indicator to you that you have been poisoned by lead. And if you continue to do this, you're going to get worse damage.
And that would be a long blue line running along...
A blue-black line across the gums.
Across the top of the teeth.
Yes, across the gums, the actual gums.
The actual gums.
And it appears.
Yes.
And that's an indicator to you that you've been poisoned by lead.
And that's permanent.
That's permanent. Now, in the teeth, what happens is the fluoride causes a derangement in the formation of the teeth, and you now have a structural damage to the tooth surface, and it's a white fleck. In most children, it's a white fleck, a very mild white flecking that you see running horizontally across the teeth. On closer examination with scanning electron microscopic shots, you'll find that it's not white flecks, it's actually thousands of little holes that have been dissolved through the enamel of the teeth. And they then allow brown staining to happen on the teeth, as in more advanced cases of dental fluorosis. At that point, your skeleton has already been affected. There are two studies out of Poland in 1993 where they had a new kind of a digitalized, computerized x-ray, and they took 30 children who had dental fluorosis and 30 children who had never had fluoride exposure, and they took a scanning shot of the long femur, the long bone in, up to the hip in the leg, and they found that the children who had dental fluorosis had bone perturbances at the top end of the femur, and their bones had been thickened in compared to the normal. They then did the exact same study all over again because they didn't believe their own results, using the same batch of Kodak film, the same technicians, and they got a different batch, two batches of children, and the results came out exactly the same. So I'm afraid that the 50% of the children in the Republic of Ireland right now have dental fluorosis. They also have skeletal changes. If you continue to consume fluoride, it can only lead to osteoporosis, because in India it leads to skeletal fluorosis, which is bone warping, actual bending of the bones. But they have higher doses, and they also have a much worse diet. They have no vitamin C in their diet or no calcium, very low calcium levels. And because of that, they are more susceptible.
Was the water in India fluoridated by the government, or is it a natural fluoridation from the earth itself?
Well, it's what happened was there is a natural crust in the earth's surface with fluoride in it, and in certain parts of the world it comes up and touches the earth's surface. It comes very close. India, it would touch in the Punjab. It would also touch in Kenya. It would touch in parts of Turkey, and it would also touch in parts of China. Now, the normal drinking water, they would take surface water. But One of the aid agencies came in and drilled wells all over India in every village, and they drilled down very deep because they were being paid by the foot to drill. So they drilled deep wells, and they drilled into the fluoride crust. Now calcium fluoride is in large quantities for them, and we're talking from 1 part per million up to 10, 20 parts per million they're actually getting in their water supplies in certain areas, not all. And in those areas, they have a large number of people with skeletal fluorosis. In fact, they have over 6 million Indians with skeletal fluorosis, and 2 million of them are children. And that's why Dr. Shishila was brought in, because to them, this is an actual medical emergency. And she was given unlimited funding and 25 years of research. She has over 100 scientific studies in biomedical journals around the world in her own name, all proving harm from fluoride, from irritable bowel syndrome to migraine headaches, to all the way up to bone disorders.
Yes. Now, in any way, is that, once damage has been done, I would imagine it's fairly permanent. Is there any way of reversing damage already done that?
The only thing you can do, when you stop taking in the fluoride, you continue to excrete it, even that you're not taking it in anymore. So for a number of months and into years, you will continue to excrete the fluoride. Your body obviously wants to get it out of the bones. Now, the damage it does when it's in there is permanent insofar as the teeth, the staining of the teeth is forever. They are now brittle. Your bones are now thickened. That can't be undone. But you can take calcium and build up your calcium level, because the other thing that Dr. Shishila was able to prove is as the fluoride level rises in the body, the calcium level goes down in direct proportion. So that all the fluoride is doing is bonding with calcium, preventing your bones from being able to make soft, flexible bones. And haven't they been saying for years that fluoride makes hard teeth? Well, yes, it does, and it also makes hard bones, because your teeth are the only visible part of your skeleton. Yes. So if it's making hard teeth, it's making hard bones, and hard bones are not healthy bones. Healthy bones are young, flexible bones. When you fall down, they bend. Not you fall down, they break like crystal. That's osteoporosis. And who has the highest osteoporosis rate in Europe is the Republic of Ireland. You have the highest irritable bowel syndrome rate I've ever heard of, 1/5 of the population, and you have the highest dental fluorosis rate, which is 50% of the population of children have it now, and you also have the highest cancer rate. And all of these things have been scientifically linked with fluoride consumption.
So what can the average person do to protect themselves and their families, Walter?
In my opinion, the best thing you can do is get off the water supply. Now, you can get yourself a distillation unit. You can get a reverse osmosis filter for under the sink, although it's fairly expensive. You can get bottled water. That's about all you can do. The best thing you can do is to join the citizens' groups and fight this. Take this to your local council and demand that they stop this. They have the power to get this stopped.
Yes.
They're just not exercising it.
Yeah.
We need to, as citizens, bring it to them.
Now, could you describe how the reverse osmosis works? I know it's a filtering system. I've heard a little bit about it, but I don't think... I know very little about it anyway. I'd be interested to hear. The reverse osmosis takes pollution out of the water.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, the reverse osmosis is plumbed in under your sink, and it has a number of carbon filters first that the water meets up with, and then it comes to it's forced across a man-made membrane, two membranes with a gap, and as the water is forced through the one membrane and jumps across to the other membrane, most of the contaminants drop. They don't make it across the gap.
Yes.
And then when it hits the other membrane, by the time it permeates through, the rest of the contaminants, a lot of the contaminants have been taken out. It takes out about 85% of all the contaminants in the water supply. Then it is transported to a rubber lung where it sits, waiting for you to come in the morning and turn it on. And then under pressure, it's forced up through to a special sink, a tap. And so there are a couple of drawbacks from my thinking with the reverse osmosis, and that is that, first of all, I don't know what the man-made membranes are.
Yes.
I don't know whether forcing it through carbon filters that have silver in them, what that effect that has either. And also, the filters stop becoming efficient from the first day. They're at peak performance on the first day, and as the days wear on, they're becoming less and less efficient. And as the months wear on, they may be blocking very little of this in comparison to what they were in the beginning of the month. The other problem for me is that if you go away for a couple of days, it's sitting in a rubber sack for those days, waiting for you to come home. I don't know how much bacteria can grow in those. I don't see any way of preventing this, and I don't think it's the most efficient. Distillation takes out 97% of all the contaminants. So in my mind, why would you want another 12% of contaminants and all the risks of the other things that are attached to this, plus the reverse osmosis, you have to replace the filters continuously, and they cost a lot of money. The distillation, you buy once.
Yes.
And that's it. And from then on, you're in business.
Of course, people are always conscious of time, energy, and effort. And they're also, obviously, very heavily influenced by the cost of these instruments. So water distillation virtually boils the water into steam.
That's right.
And then the steam is turned back into water.
And the contaminants are left behind.
The contaminants are left behind.
That's right. So it takes out 97% of these contaminants.
Including the fluoride.
Including the fluoride.
Yes.
I think it's more accessible to more people because it's cheaper, for one thing. And it's also transportable. So that if you go away on holiday to Spain, you can take your distillation unit with you. And I have done that. And I've distilled my water on holiday. So I don't worry about what I'm drinking when I'm away on holiday. I make sure it's pure. So, in fact, we had a breakout of cryptosporidium in Northern Ireland. It had no effect on our family because we had distilled all our water. But other neighbors were getting this, and children were going into hospital over it.
Wow.
So it has its benefits.
Yes.
You know.
How long are you in your own life distilling water or drinking distilled water?
I never even thought of doing this until this whole campaign came up. And then when I started looking into the water, I realized there were a lot of contaminants going into your water system by the water service. I had no idea they were chucking in large quantities of aluminium, that the aluminium itself was also contaminated with lead and arsenic and other contaminants as well, and that they were using sulfuric acid, that they had Magnafloc chemicals going in, which are deadly to fish. I had no idea that there were all these contaminants. And once I found out, I then started distilling my water. So that was back in 96 when I first found out that we were doing this. And I also was getting my family out of the way should the water fluoridation have come in anyway.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that they didn't, that we didn't get this stuff.
So in actual fact, the fluoridation of the water here in Northern Ireland didn't take place.
It never took place. But the reason it didn't take place was because all the councils voted against it. I mean, 25 out of 26. And at the end of that consultation period, I helped form the councils into a coalition of councils called the Northern Ireland Councils Against Fluoridation. Most of them joined it, and then we threatened to sue the government using council money. And they backed down. It took a year and a half to get them to admit defeat. And during that time, I also went into the two areas which were fluoridated, which was Tandragee and Holywood, and I formed citizens groups in those areas. We brought it to their local councillors. We brought it to the local citizens groups. And we then got it stopped in those two areas. So there is nowhere in Northern Ireland now that has fluoride added to its water system. And the push will be to make laws happen to prevent this from ever coming back.
That must have taken a lot of time and energy and effort on your behalf and the people who campaigned with you.
Mm.
And it must have been a great sense of personal achievement to you to have succeeded in what you've done.
Oh, yes. I mean, I didn't have time to look at it while I was doing it. I was just busy as all hell. Every day I put in hours on fighting this because, unfortunately, at the end of our consultation period, everybody in Northern Ireland who had fought this stopped.
Right.
Because they felt, well, we stopped it coming in.
Yes.
I wasn't happy at that. As far as I was concerned, I want to make sure it never came back. And
yes.
I also felt that we should get it out of the towns that it was being done in.
Yes.
So I wasn't going to be happy till I got it stopped in the towns. So I then went into these towns, got the citizens groups to fight it. We did marches on Stormont, a number of marches on Stormont, and we eventually got this thing stopped. But then I started thinking, well, the Republic of Ireland's getting this, and nobody down there even knows there's a problem. So I then took it to the Republic of Ireland and started citizens groups in the Republic of Ireland. You now have a citizens group in Leitrim, Sligo, County Meath, and in Dublin. And their object is the exact same as it was in Northern Ireland, is to stop the mass medication of an entire population against their will. And so they're more focused, and they're fighting this campaign now here in the Republic of Ireland right now. And we also have, so far, we have 5 county councils voted against this. And we also have 7 area health and, or, what do you
call area health boards?
No,
Urban district
councils. Yes. We have 7 of those, as far as I know, voted against this as well. So there is a movement that's heading towards your door right now, demanding that this be stopped. But like the Northern Ireland government, they were intending to do this despite us saying no. They even told the BBC that this was going to go ahead, even if every council voted against it.
Yeah, and that doesn't augur well too well for democracy, really, does it?
Well, there's no such thing in democracy in fluoridation, you know. I mean, there are dogs and cats and budgies out there who are having to drink this, and they don't even have teeth, some of them. You know, I mean, chickens don't have teeth. Why are they drinking this? 40% of the elderly don't have their teeth. Why are they drinking this? Then there's Christian Scientists who are not allowed to take any chemicals at all, and they're being forced to drink this. And you have the number of people who don't want it in the first place. Why are they being forced to drink this? Why is this mandatory? When you look at it logically, inoculations, which are for life-threatening diseases, they have to have your written permission before they give you the drug.
That's right.
Yet dental caries, or cavities, which are non-life-threatening, non-contagious oral disease, it's mandatory.
Yeah.
And what have you gotten for 35 years of drugging the population? You have still got dental caries, you still have cavities, but you've traded one oral disease for another oral disease, which is dental fluorosis. Cavities was appearing in small numbers of your children. Now, dental fluorosis, on the other hand, is appearing in 50% of the children.
Yes.
So you've now got, you haven't gotten rid of cavities because you haven't withdrawn the sugar, and you now have a new oral disease that never existed before in the population before they started putting fluoride in.
We were talking earlier on, Walter, about irritable bowel. What other symptoms or illnesses or diseases would fluoride be implicated in?
Well, it has been linked to degenerative changes in the adrenal glands, heart, central nervous system, lungs, reproductive organs. And so it can do reproductive interference as well. So it appears from the medical evidence from animal studies. It also does lowering of IQs in children. And there's a number of studies that show it's neurotoxic. And 3 studies came out of China from 1990 to 96 showing that it lowered children's IQs from 5 to 19 points. You also have a number of studies that show that, I think there's well over 100 that show that it interferes in thyroid production of thyroxin. So, and up for a number of years, doctors in America and Britain and all over the world were prescribing sodium fluoride for people who had overactive thyroids to give them normal thyroid activity. So what happens when you put this into a water supply of a population of normal thyroids? You're bound to have a certain proportion of them who don't get enough thyroxin getting underactive thyroids. And then what happens when they get the underactive thyroid? They have to go to the pharmaceutical industry to get synthetic thyroxin. And it seems to be a perpetuating thing. And what happens to the people who have the irritable bowel? They have to go to the pharmaceutical industry for preparations for irritable bowel symptoms.
I believe in the Republic of Ireland that the biggest selling over-the-counter drug, if you like, or health requirement for the general public is antacids.
Yes. I know, it's sad, isn't it? If we actually stop this, heaven knows how many people we could clear this up in overnight. And I think that's probably one of the big fears that's driving this for the government.
But I think if the people suffering from these things were to find out that, you know, that they could actually pinpoint what was causing it, they
yes.
would be really irate. I would think so.
I would think there'd be lawsuits, and that's exactly what the government's terrified of, if they ever find out. Because if you have a fifth of the population, and that's only the ones who've reported it, there must
yes,
be an awful lot of people at home suffering who are not telling anybody
that's
about
true.
This.
That's true.
And so you have a fifth of the population with irritable bowel syndrome. Yeah. If they got rid of all the fluoride from any source, and I'm talking mouthwashes, toothpaste, even tea is high in naturally occurring fluoride because it comes from fluoridated areas in the world. If you start avoiding all the fluoride and the water system,
yes.
You'll have a dramatic change, according to Dr. Shishila, in 10 to 15 days with no drugs.
As quick as that?
As quick as that. No drugs at all. So I wonder how many people we could cure here, really,
yes.
of this. And that's, It has also got links, scientific links to Down syndrome. Increased numbers of Down syndrome children are born in fluoridated areas compared to non-fluoridated. It has increased hip fracture rates in fluoridated areas. There's 10 international studies that show increased rates of hip fracture rates amongst the elderly in fluoridated areas compared to non-fluoridated.
And of course, when you talk about hip replacement surgery, that is a very, very widely practiced operation.
Absolutely.
And also knee replacements.
Yes, because as you're making hard teeth, you're making hard bones, you're making hard cartilage, you're making hard connective tissue,
yes,
you're going to start to have a breakdown in these tissues. They're going to start to wear down a little faster. And I actually have a page out of a pharmaceutical journal.
Yes.
Turn it off for a second. And this is from a veterinary textbook. Most vets have it. I've met vets in the Republic of Ireland that have it. And the meaning for fluorosis is a chronic disease caused by the ingestion of small but toxic amounts of fluorine in the diet and drinking water, and is characterized by mottling and excessive wear of developing teeth and osteoporosis. So that says it all.
Yeah. Of course, what the animals really suffer from, human beings suffer from also.
Absolutely. Not only that, you know, I'm not the only one going around complaining here. There are a union of scientists in the Environmental Protection Agency. There are 1,500 scientists in there, in Washington. They've all voted against this. Their union voted against this, and their union put out a statement in 1997. And the letter actually, one sentence is all I'm going to read to you out of it. And it says, "Our members' review of the body of evidence over the last 11 years, including animal and human epidemiology studies, indicate a causal link between fluoride, fluoridation, and cancer, genetic damage, neurological impairment, and bone pathology. Of particular concern are recent epidemiology studies linking fluoride exposures to lower IQ in children." Now, do the benefits outweigh the risks? I don't think so.
Well, to be honest, I don't think the risks have been looked at. I don't think the connection has been made, and if it has been made, it has been ignored.
Of course it has. Because, again, going back to the logic of this, which is where I think it all starts from, you know, when I told you about taking out the 400, the out of the water, and the first 40% lost in underground leaks.
That's right. Yeah.
If we put money to that, they spend £400,000 a year on the acid alone. That's not the full cost of fluoridation. It runs into millions. £400,000 a year. If we take away the 40% in underground leaks, the 7/8 to industry, down to the 3% of children who are the target audience, out of £400,000 spent, £15 makes it to the target audience of children. For all of Ireland, £15. Out of that £15, you excrete 50% in your urine of all the fluoride you run into. So you're only getting £7.50 into the children's bodies. Now remember, you drink, the water passes your teeth at 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
It doesn't come in with a little tag that says teeth only. If it's passing your teeth at 100 miles an hour, it now has to find its way biologically back again. So you can't possibly believe that the only thing it's changing is your teeth. It's got access to every cell in your body. You're 76% water. It's bound to be affecting other systems while it's in there. The other thing I would point out is that it doesn't make sense on another level, in that when they put this in the water system, they put it in at a dosing point. That's the only place they test.
Yes.
So they test it and they say, oh, it's at 1 part per million at the dosing plant. Now you're telling me that it stays suspended equally over 3,000 or 4,000 miles of pipes till it gets to your kitchen sink? They never test at your kitchen sink, do they, Jim?
No, and that's the place really where it should be tested.
Of course. The fact is that the people closest to the factory get a larger dose probably than the people further down the line, and some people may even get none. So the dosing is out of control.
Yes.
And, you know, drugs are given by body weight, in that a small baby gets a very small dose and a large 300-pound adult gets a large dose of a drug. When you go to the doctor, does he say, how thirsty are you today? Here's an extra 3 tablets, Jim. So they're giving out drugs by thirst now. And you have people who are out working on a building site on a hot day drinking 6 times more than another person, getting 6 times more of the fluoride. And also, because most babies now, 60% of babies are now bottle fed, they now get a larger dose than do the adults by body weight, because they drink 8 times more than any adult in the house by body weight. So they're getting 8 times more of the drug than are the adults. Tell me another prescription drug that says that the adult should get, an eighth of what the baby's getting.
Yes.
It's always the other way around.
Yes.
So this flies in the face of medical safety of drugs, even. It's illogical.
Yeah. And also, I've heard it said that when a person is thirsty, that they're already dehydrated.
Absolutely, that's true. And the other ironic bit is that you have a public utility doing this, no different than the electric light company. And they're delivering drugs without a license to you in uncontrolled amounts, in an uncontrolled environment. Now, for a small target audience who don't brush their teeth and eat too many sugary foods and drink fizzy drinks. Now, you're taking a drug for somebody else. Now, if this small group of children get hemorrhoids, are you willing to take hemorrhoid cream for the rest of your life, Jim? I mean, where do you draw the line here? You're taking somebody else's drug. Now, I have in front of me an extract page out of the British Medical Association's New Guide and Medicines and Drugs, 3rd edition, 1994, and under fluoride, under symptoms and risks of excess intake, it says, in large quantities, fluoride may cause slow poisoning termed fluorosis. Now, Jim, wait till you hear what a large quantity is. Prolonged intake of water containing more than 2 parts per million fluoride. You're getting 1.5 in your water system by law.
That's and very close, isn't it?
We're talking 0.5 parts of a million?
Yes.
In a liter of water? This is a pin dot. It's not even, you couldn't even see it under a microscope. And it says that prolonged intake of water containing more than 2 parts per million fluoride may lead to mottled or brown discoloration of the enamel of developing teeth. Now it goes on to say, very high levels, wait till you hear what a high level is, Jim, this will shock you, over 8 parts per million may lead to bone disorders and degenerative changes in the kidneys, liver, adrenal glands, heart, central nervous system, and reproductive organs. That's the entire human being is being dissolved or destroyed at 8 parts per million. Now, if they're putting in 1.5, by law they're allowed to put in 1.5, the difference between 1.5 and the 2 where it starts doing damage is a pin dot. The difference between that one pin dot and the 8 parts per million is 6.5 pin dots. And that's the margin of safety we're talking about. There's no margin of safety at all. In the development of drugs, all drugs need a margin of safety in the order of 100 in order to be put on the market. So that at 1 part per million, it does your teeth some good, supposedly. It should do you no harm, no physical harm, for 100 parts per million. Fluoride, on the other hand, does your teeth good and has no side effects at all at 1.5 parts per million, but it totally starts destroying your teeth at 2 parts per million, and by the time it gets to 8 parts per million, it's just destroying the entire human body.
Yeah.
There's no margin of safety. Because of that, it has never been passed and approved anywhere in the world as a drug. It has been passed and approved as a cosmetic and toiletry, because they don't require proof of safety or effectiveness.
Mentioning drugs, you mentioned some drugs on the video, or the interview you did on the video, could you mention some of the drugs that the fluoride is actually in, and why would it actually be in drugs, Walter?
It's in drugs because it's very effective. it does chemical reactions that other chemicals cannot do. It's a highly charged reactive substance, the most reactive substance on the periodic table. And it's able to glue together chemicals that couldn't be glued together any other way. And it makes reactions happen in those chemicals, makes them much more toxic than they normally would be. So it's in pesticides, it's in rodenticides, it's rat poison, it's actually registered as rat poison cockroach powder by the EPA, and it's also in a lot of pharmaceuticals that you're not even aware of. It's in Prozac, it's in Rohypnol, a date rape drug, which is really just Valium with fluoride added to it, which then makes it something like 150 times more potent than it was as Valium. It's also in a lot of nerve gases. It's in 1080, 1081. It's in sarin, the nerve gas. It's in fluoroacetate, one of the most toxic substances on Earth. So fluoride is used in a lot of pharmaceuticals. It's also in children's inhalers for asthma. So it's found its way into a lot of different drugs because it's since it hasn't been passed and approved, there's no way of restricting it. It can be used for anything they want to use it for.
And that's ironic, isn't it? It's not a passed as a drug, yet it can be used as a drug.
Of course. We're just talking semantics here. They have no way of passing and proving this as a drug because it has no margin of safety. They cannot get past that. And also, in order to pass and approve it as a drug, it must be tested for safety. There's the problem for them. We've got one of the most toxic substances on Earth, inorganic chemicals on Earth, more toxic than lead and only marginally less toxic than arsenic. It cannot be passed and approved as a drug. It wouldn't make it. Therefore, they just never test it.
Yes.
So they pass and approved it as a cosmetic and toiletry. That way they don't require testing or proof of safety or effectiveness.
As well as drugs, is there any specific foods or is there any particular industries that are using it in a commercial way that would get into like our food chain or?
Well, there's other ways you'll get contact with it. It's used, fluoride is also used in wood preserver. It's used in etching glass in industry. It's used to strip hides in abattoirs of all the gore and stuff. It's used in a lot of different industrial settings, but you also can run into it from other sources, such as pesticides. It's in a lot of pesticides. It's used as a killing agent in pesticides. And so it's sprayed on your food. You also get it from the CFCs that have cut the hole in the ozone. The F is fluoride, chlorofluorocarbons. So it's raining down on you right now as acid rain. We're all breathing it. Then you also have it, coal burning releases hydrogen fluoride, and then it comes out of the back end of cars from unleaded petrol as hydrogen fluoride as well, because they use fluoride to bond the lead to take it out of leaded petrol. You also get it from a lot of your factories. They put it out of their smokestacks, steel, ceramics, your power plants. They all produce hydrogen fluoride out of the smokestack. So you're getting a lot of this from a lot of different sources right now,
yes,
without it being also in your water system.
Yeah. And one particular source I was amazed and fascinated by was the Teflon.
Yes.
Could you tell me that story again about the very expensive birds in America?
Well, now this was a story that was sent to me by somebody in America who got this out of a pet magazine. And there was some woman who was raising cockatoos, rare breeds of cockatoos in America. And I think she had 30 some odd birds. She was cooking with a Teflon frying pan, and it suddenly overheated, and all the birds started dropping off the perches. They all died. When they were analyzed, they had been poisoned by fluoride, which had been released as hydrogen fluoride from the Teflon. Teflon has fluoride in it, and if you overheat it, it'll break down, and it becomes airborne. Now, she was a bigger animal, so it didn't affect her, but the canary in the mine theory apparently took hold here. And so this story was reproduced in a lot of pet journals to warn people not to keep their birds in the kitchen.
Yes.
Because if you're using this Teflon nonstick stuff, it might break down and kill all the animals, which always made me wonder, well, how many cockatoos make up one baby? You know, if you happen to have your baby in the kitchen with you, is it liable to die? And you wonder what the heck happened to it. I don't know. I've never come across it, but that I did read in the pet journal, and it was sent to me. There were also in a pet journal about hamsters and gerbils that they should not be fed fluoridated water because they will shed their young. They won't even go to full term with their babies in a fluoridated area. Now that's also being put in ads for gerbils for sale and so on in pet journals in America. And since we have some studies that have looked at infertility in humans and found it to be present in fluoridated areas, I suspect there is something to all of this. But I haven't really gone into it. I don't know what the research says, but I know with all of this research, it all comes down to one basic situation. If we have scientists and doctors who say that they have research that proves it causes harm, from cancer to genetic damage to Down syndrome to dental fluorosis, and then we have other doctors, government doctors, who say that there is no proof, we have a medical controversy. And in any medical controversy, you must err on the side of safety, because this may turn out to be thalidomide for all we know. And we cannot take the chance with an entire population, because if even one of these studies turns out to be true, you're facing a tremendous, massive medical catastrophe here in Ireland.
And it's amazing, too, the speed at which the body recovers. I mean, in 15 days, things can be almost reversed. That's an amazing ability by the body to recover. So rather than treating symptoms with pills and potions and different things that the doctors do, what we really should be doing is take out the toxicity, take out the poisons, and see what the body says then.
That's right.
And then treat whatever it is that needs to be treated. You also mentioned a few days ago that the homeopathic treatments will not work in fluoridation areas.
Yes, well, I was told that by Jan de Vries, and because he's a friend of Hans Muhlenberg, who fought it in Holland. Jan de Vries said that the homeopathic remedies won't work because a lot of the homeopathic remedies are enzyme-based, and fluoride is an enzyme poison. So, like, for example, aloe vera toothpaste cannot have fluoride in it because aloe vera is an enzyme.
Could you just briefly explain what an enzyme is? I mean, lots of people have heard what enzymes are, but we, you know, the general kind of everyday person doesn't really understand what an enzyme is. Could you briefly describe that?
Yeah, I wouldn't get too technical. The only thing I would say is that enzymes are a basic functioning chemical for your cells. Your cells use them to transmit information. So they use them for communication. Your immune system is made up of enzymes. There are thousands of enzymes in your body. You are an enzyme animal. You function on enzymes. Every cellular function that takes place requires an enzyme to make it happen. So it's as basic as that. And when you put in something that's an enzyme poison, you can never tell what enzyme it's going to interfere with and where the damage is going to show. That's why this appears to be very controversial, what I'm saying, that it can do so much damage, from tooth damage to bone damage to cancer, appears to be so wide in effect, but it's because it interferes with enzymes. It's as basic as that. And since enzymes are in every function of the body, there's no telling what damage and where it's going to show up in susceptible people.
Well, it's like an explosion, really, isn't it? It just goes into the body and goes all over the place.
It goes wherever it wants to go, and it can cross the blood-brain barrier. It also can jump the placenta. And we have a couple of studies here that show, the Chinese studies that showed the lower IQ. I mean, they actually say that it crosses the blood-brain barrier of a fetus and accumulates in the cerebral fluids, thereby lowering children's IQs. That's in their own words from China. So, I mean, I'm kind of worried because you have something that can jump the placenta. It can cross the blood-brain barrier. This is a highly toxic substance that causes chemical reactions.
Well, the thing is, if it can cross the blood-brain barrier and it is known to actually bond things,
yes,
it can actually bring other things then through the blood-brain barrier with it.
That's right, and that's what it appears to do. There are a couple of studies that show that it brings the aluminium that's also being added to your water supply across the blood-brain barrier with it, and deposits it in the brain. And then the brain sees two neurotoxins at one time coming in, and it excretes the fluoride first, leaving the aluminium behind to do the damage. So it's now being implicated in Alzheimer's as well. The Environmental Protection Agency scientists have been involved in a couple of studies so far that have found it to cause dementia-type results, very similar to Alzheimer's in rats.
Has there been any feedback from fluoridated areas that have become unfluoridated? In other words, has the health of people improved, or is it that once damage has been done, it's irreversible?
Well, there are two things I'll draw you to here. One is that on the dental side, there are 14 different places I could name that when they stopped fluoridating, the dental decay rate continued to go down. So apparently when the fluoride was withdrawn, it made no effect. They actually had lowering of their tooth decay rates. Not, you would expect if this stuff worked, when you withdrew it, the decay rate would go up, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But that's not what happened. The other thing that I have been told is that from Dr. Hans Muhlenberg, who fought this in Holland, he was the cancer specialist in Holland who found large portions of the population suffering from irritable bowel syndrome, migraine headaches, joint pains, rashes, heavy fatigue. That's the other thing, that whenever you interfere with the thyroid, you get is heavy fatigue. And they did a study in, I think it's 1996. They went back into their two control cities. Originally, when this was all being started in Holland, they took two cities. One was kept non-fluoridated and the other was fluoridated. They've now looked at the cancer rates, because they had the identical cancer rates back in the 50s and 60s, whenever this was all being started. And they found now in 1996 that the in all cancers, they are at least double or much higher in the fluoridated communities than in the control community.
Wow.
And this is, they now stopped fluoridation back in 1976. So we're talking the effect of fluoride may have done enough damage to continue the growth of cancer. I don't know, but that's what that study does point to. And again, if there are 20 studies at least out there that show that this causes cancer, I mean, can we take a chance with an entire population? They obviously show that it's possible. And your government, which is required by law, the same law it uses to force you to drink this drug, is required by law to do side effect studies every year. And in 35 years, they've never done one. Why? Because if you look for a problem, you're going to find it. And I think that's exactly what's happened here. They do not want to do the studies. And when we've tried forcing them to do the studies, what have they done? They've done a fluoride forum where they've gotten the people who've been promoting it for years to be on this forum to look into whether this is safe or not. You know, unfortunately, it's sort of like a kangaroo court, and I don't expect an unbiased result from it, because they know litigation will start up. Everybody out there who has a child who has dental fluorosis is entitled to sue the government, and they will get compensation for this damage eventually, because nobody has the right to give you an oral disease against your will.
In the EEC in general, Walter, how many countries are actually fluoridating water presently?
At the moment, only 2% of Europe actually fluoridate, and you're 1.5% of that 2%. So you really only have it in small parts of Spain. The Basques and Andalusia is getting a little bit of it. Beyond that, I don't believe there's any fluoride happening in the rest of Europe. Most of the countries in Europe have rejected fluoridation and or discontinued it. A lot of them tried it and then stopped because of health effects and environmental impact, and nobody had the right to do this to people. So Europe is 98% fluoride-free, and nobody mandates it by law anywhere in the world other than here that I know of. So you're in the world population, only 3% of the world's population get fluoridated water. You know, 97% don't. So you're in the 3% that do.
There was a very famous book came out in the late 90s, Your Body's Many Cries for Water.
Yes.
Of Dr. Batlajami.
That's right.
He had incredible success in helping people with just increasing their water intake. And how ironic, if we're in a fluoridated area,
that's right,
and we're not aware of fluoride, we're encouraging them people to drink more water, so
that's right.
That is actually reversing the effects that we would ideally want.
Yes, because you have to have water to exist on the planet. This is an essential of life, and nobody has the right to put drugs into something that is a necessity for life, number one. But you also, as you're increasing your water intake, you're increasing your fluoride intake. And then fluoride is then building up in the system. And at a certain point in your life, and it may be an older age, it starts to show its effects, which might be for some people osteoporosis. Most people, I would think, osteoporosis and arthritic complaints. For others, it will be irritable bowel syndrome from the very first day they get it.
And so it has a cumulative effect. As we grow old and we keep drinking it, it just piles
it's building up and building up.
Building up.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in the bones of people who've been autopsied in Toronto, they had twice as much fluoride in their bone structure in the hips as people who died in Montreal, which was unfluoridated. So you have vast quantities of fluoride. It also builds up in the pineal gland. There's recent studies that have shown huge quantities of fluoride in the pineal gland. And considering that the pineal gland controls, which is melatonin, which is sleep, which is cell rebuilding, this is not a good thing to have happen. So it can build up in a lot of different areas. Mostly it builds up in your bone system. And then remember, it's being stored in the center of your bones. And where is your immune system born?
In the
center of your bones. So you're putting in a neurotoxic substance into the bone system, which is an enzyme poison, at a time in children's lives when they're in a developmental stage. We don't know what this could do for them in later life. Will they have trouble reproducing? Will they have lowered IQs as they found in China and other studies in America? We don't know. But the fact that we don't know doesn't mean they're not happening. And
that's right.
This has got to be brought to a stop. I would also bring you to the chemical contaminant list, because the citizens groups that I've helped start here in the Republic of Ireland got hold of some of the acid and they sent it away to an independent lab, and they got 28 different contaminants. And we're talking arsenic, lead, boron, we're talking nickel, mercury, chromium, antimony, cobalt, strontium. I mean, these are not substances that anybody should be taking. And I also got Dr. Hans Muhlenberg, the cancer specialist who stopped it in Holland, to write to the manufacturer and ask if it had uranium in it. And they wrote back and said, yes, it has uranium-238 in it, which is what they make the bomb out of. So this is a chemical cocktail with radionuclides in it as well, which means it's got radioactive particles in it and waste products from radioactive particles. This should not be fed to human beings. And all that's really happening is a large amount of contaminants are being put into your water supply. You're putting toxic waste from the fertilizer industry into your water supply and pretending that it's doing the teeth some good. I have a page out of a toxicology book. His name is Roholm, who is the top toxicologist, and all colleges have that textbook even today. And on the page on comparison of solubility of some important inorganic fluorides, it has the three different kinds of fluoride that you're going to meet up with. Under calcium fluoride, which is the naturally occurring fluoride that you get small traces of in some water supplies, it's considered moderately toxic. The sodium fluoride, which is the toxic waste of this aluminium industry, which is in your toothpaste, is classed as very toxic. The hydrofluorosilicic acid, the most corrosive acid on earth that's put into your water supply, is classed as extremely toxic. The difference between the toxicity of hydrofluorosilicic acid and the naturally occurring calcium fluoride is 2,476 times more toxic, because it's 476 times more water soluble. Since you're a water-based organism, the more water soluble, the more cells it can adversely affect. The calcium fluoride is more of a solid, and you excrete more of it. So there's not as much of it in your system to do as much damage. And the sodium fluoride is a little more water-soluble. It's 50% water-soluble. But the hydrofluorosilicic acid is fluoride at almost 100% water solubility. So there's no cells it can't go into.
Yes.
Just think that's...
And of course, at a cellular level, that's our basic structure.
That's everything. Water is an essential for life. And as I've been saying, nobody has the right to drug an entire population against their will in the year 2001 for any reason. Yes. And this is not the cure to cancer. This is cavities. And nobody's dropping dead out in the street from cavities.
Yes.
So, and if you lost all your teeth, you'd get dentures and life would go on. But you cannot replace osteoporosis. You cannot stop the damage that's being done. And that's why we have to stop this sooner rather than later, because as we bother messing around with the government trying to get them to stop doing this, more and more victims are being created.
This is the Irish Medical Journal. And what does that say?
This is only out a couple of months.
Yes.
The Irish Medical Journal, and they ran an article by a Dr. Don McCauley. And he, in it, called it Water Fluoridation, Pollutant or Panacea. And through it, he scientifically references every word of this. So it has been peer-reviewed by doctors, a team of doctors, who have gone through all the references and decided that this is true, and then have published it in the Irish Medical Journal. And in here, he says that fluoride has been linked to tooth damage, bone damage, even cancer, and bone cancer in particular, and high hip fracture rates, and gastrointestinal changes like irritable bowel syndrome. So I would be putting it forward as evidence of harm.
Yes.
But anyway, the website, the Citizens Group in the Republic of Ireland in Dublin have a website, and it's www.fluoridefree, that's all one word, and fluoride is spelled F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E, free.com. And that gets you through to their website, and they have all the scientific proof of everything that I've said here today on the website, along with connections to other websites around the world, including the Environmental Protection Agency's website. So you'll be brought to a lot of information if you really want it.
Yes. The internet is a great resource also, because you can find just a mass of information, and very hard and obscure information to find would often be found there.
That's right. It's revolutionizing the face of protesting as well, because as far away as Zimbabwe or anywhere you can name on the planet now, somebody can download this information and take on their own health board with it. So it's going to be harder and harder to convince people that there's no problem here when you have websites up like the fluoride-free website, because there's information readily accessible, and they update it all the time. So as new things happen, it goes on the website.
So, as well as the citizens' groups already formed, Walter, are there any more citizens' groups?
There's one that I know of that's trying to get formed at the moment. But I would say to anybody out there from any area in Ireland to please try and form one. I'll give you a hand. The other fluoride citizens groups will also give you a hand. We'll give you leaflets. We'll give you all the support you need. We'll give you speakers to get your group up and running.
Yes.
Because the only way this is going to stop is citizen awareness.
And how is the group funded itself?
It's self-funded. We don't ask for money to join.
Yes.
It's voluntary, and whatever money it costs you to do your bit, you just take it on. Whatever you can afford and whatever you can do, you do. I've been fighting this since 1996, and I can tell you it costs thousands just in phone calls each year.
Yes.
But it's just, that's my business. I don't make that anybody else's. We will be eventually, fairly soon, I'm hoping, launching a lawsuit against the Irish government. At the point when we take on the larger lawsuit, which will be the one on dental fluorosis or some other condition that we'll take them on, it's going to require large amounts of funding. At that point, we'll be turning to the public and asking for donations of some kind, or we'll be starting up car boot sales or cake bake sales or something to try and get up the money, because we have to take them on.
Yeah, it's a very serious issue, and also, I mean, you're obviously very dedicated, and it's taken a lot of your time, health, and energy,
mm-hmm.
really, I suppose. You know, you've been campaigning now for a long number of years, and you know, what motivates you then to continue now that you've kind of succeeded? As you said, quite a lot of your colleagues who were, you know, campaigning alongside you, once fluoridation stopped in the Northern Ireland.
They stopped. Yeah.
What motivated you then to continue? Obviously, I mean, you feel it with a passion and a desire,
mm-hmm.
and I know that for you're a very genuine person. I know that mm-hmm. for a fact. So, what motivates you then to carry on? Because it's like everything is okay in this part of the world now.
I guess if this had have been a screwdriver that bent when you used it, I probably would have thrown my screwdriver away and told nobody about it, and made sure I never bought another screwdriver, you know. But this was hurting people. And somehow, when I started getting the scientific evidence and I met the scientist who had done the research,
yes.
I was seriously concerned for the entire population anywhere in the world that this is happening. And I don't see any difference between me and somebody in another country. We're all human beings. And so I see myself as part of the bigger picture, not the little, I'm from Northern Ireland or I'm from New York.
Yes.
That's nothing to do with this. As far as I'm concerned, a child in New York has to be protected and a child in Southern Ireland has to be protected. And the scientific evidence is out there to back up all of this evidence. And the scientists are even willing to fly over to give evidence, which I find amazing. And they're doing it not charging money. And I'm very concerned. I'm just worried that this is going to continue. And even if we get a stop in Northern Ireland, there's no guarantee they won't come back. And I didn't see that the people in the Republic should be left to drown in this stuff without having at least the courtesy to be told it's in there, number one, because most people don't even know it's in the water supply.
That's a fact, yes.
And then they confuse it with chlorine. They think fluorine, fluoride, chlorine, you know, it's the same thing. It's in there to disinfect the water, and no, it's not. It's in there to actually cause a physical change in you. It's a drug. It's intended to cause a physical change. And most people don't even know it's in there, because the government haven't for 35 years even mentioned the word fluoride in public. They've just been quietly dumping this stuff on you. And they don't want you to know, because the more knowledge, we may start to gang together. The next thing you know, we might sue the hell out of them. And that's the last thing they want to see. So they can do the arithmetic. They know that if they caused osteoporosis, if this has caused irritable bowel syndrome in 50% of the population, they all start suing, the litigation will be unending. It will certainly dwarf the thalidomide crisis in numbers, and it will certainly dwarf your army deafness payouts. It'll make it look like nothing. It will probably bring the government down if they had to pay out the money for this. So but in my own motivation, I'm just concerned because I don't see it stopping at the border. I just think it's a crisis, and it has to be faced. So I will continue fighting on until this is stopped. You know, however long that takes, I don't know. Sooner rather than later, though, I hope, so we can go back to having a normal life. Cattle who drink large quantities of water, in a hot weather, they drink about 20 gallons a day, I've been told by farmers who treat them. They're taking in a lot of fluoride, and so these conditions have been well known in veterinary circles for a long time, in cattle and in sheep and animals. It's only becoming now known in humans as well. But I knew a veterinarian in Northern Ireland who had helped fight this there, and he had worked in a fluoridated area in Great Britain, and he worked in an abattoir, and when he had stripped off the meat from the bones of the animals who had come from the fluoridated areas, these white patches that you see on children's teeth were on the skeletons themselves of the animals in these fluoridated areas. And they snapped like twigs, because they now had the skeletal fluorosis that we're always talking about, that this leads towards. For us, it's osteoporosis and arthritic complaints, but they're the early stages of skeletal fluorosis that they would get in the population in India. They're just the very first warning signs of bone changes. So,
well, it's the same system, isn't it, really? It's, we can see these developmental changes in animals. It has to have a same effect on humans.
Well, it must do. And the animals are like the canary in the mine for us. If it's happening to them, you know, it's an early warning sign for us. We've got to stop this. I don't know, in the Republic of Ireland right now, a lot of the farms are on wells. So they wouldn't be seeing these effects.
So it's
not going to be showing up necessarily in your cattle.
Yeah.
Because in the north of Ireland, however, we aren't on wells. Most of our farms are on the mains. And so we were about to see this in large numbers of our cattle. I took this to the Farmers Union, and I gave them all of the medical evidence on animals that I had. They then voted against this. And they wrote in a very strongly worded letter to Malcolm Moss, who was the health minister at the time, saying, you better not do this. You know, there's no benefit that we can see to our animals. But by heavens, this could cause a catastrophe in Europe if they found out that our meat was now fluoridated. Because they have fought for years never to have this. Now, what if they found out the meat was fluoridated? They could reject our meat at the market just over the fluoride content.
That would cause heavy economic upset.
Oh, absolute disaster. And look at the disasters we're having with BSE and CJD, and now with this foot and mouth outbreak. You can see that if this became known in Europe, and your beef were all fluoridated, your milk were all your milk products were fluoridated, they just have to find that out, and they wouldn't be buying it. I'm not even sure that they'd buy your beers and products like that if they knew that they had fluoride in them. Because they fought for years to try and prevent this.
Yes.
They just have not been watching what's happening around the world and where their products come from.
Yeah.
So.
You have an interesting article there.
Oh, yes.
That's a very old one too, Walter, isn't it?
This is. Now, this is a statement put out by the Journal of the American Medical Association. Now, this is back in 1943, and they were asked to do an editorial on fluoride and fluoridation, and this is what they said. Fluorides are general protoplasmic poisons with the capacity to modify the metabolism of cells by inhibiting certain enzyme systems. It further stated that the sources of fluorine intoxication are drinking water containing one part per million or more of fluorine. Now, that was back in 1943. That's before the PR started for the toothpaste and the water fluoridation, and the large chemical companies started splashing money around the planet. So that's what they thought of it back then. Now, the chemical hasn't changed in all those years, yet the American Medical Association now no longer says this. They actually endorse fluoridation. Also, we have here the American Dental Association Journal from 1944, October 1st. And it says, use of drinking water containing as little as 1.2 to 3 parts per million of fluorine will cause such developmental disturbances in bones as osteosclerosis, spondylosis, and osteopetrosis, as well as goiter. And we cannot afford to run the risk of producing such serious systematic disturbances in applying what is at present a doubtful procedure intended to prevent development of dental disfigurements among children. Further, in the light of our present knowledge or lack of knowledge of chemistry of the subject, fluorine, the potentialities for harm outweigh those for good. That was back in 1944. They now endorse it. The chemical hasn't changed. Something else has changed here.
Perception?
Perception and money. that's what I think is going on. Okay, only a number of months ago, possibly it's a year now, we had Dr. Robert Carton come over here from the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington. A senior scientist he was for about 14 years. He's now the head of chemical compliance for the German chemical warfare for the Army. Now, Dr. Carton came over here with a very disturbing story, and that was that the American government had committed fraud on fluoride and had hidden the facts that fluoride caused bone damage, and also that the damage done to teeth, they put in a report fraudulently, was cosmetic damage and not structural damage, which it really is. He was able to prove this because he had the original transcripts of their own private meetings. And he brought these with him, and he went out on 16 or 17 radio stations in the Republic of Ireland and did a number of public meetings as well, stating this. One of the pieces of information he brought with him was the total fluoride in diet. In 1943, according to McClure and Frank, you had 1 to 1.5 milligrams a day in the average person in America. By 1977, it had risen to 3 milligrams a day, according to the National Academy of Science in America. And in 1991, it was at 6.6 milligrams a day, according to the U.S. Public Health Service. 6.6 milligrams a day, as compared to back in 43, before they started the fluoridation, or just when they were starting, it was at 1 part per million. Now, since 1991, do you think it's gotten any better, Jim?
It's gotten a lot worse.
And nobody in your government is testing the levels of fluoride. And that's one of the key points I just want to bring up, that the World Health Organization also put out a statement back in 1994. And I also have from a dental journal in New York, February 2001, from an article on fluorides. It said, it is important for dental practitioners to determine the fluoride intake of every patient before recommending or dispensing any fluoride supplementation. Now, the World Health Organization went one further, and they said that the dentists or public health officials should find out the total fluoride intake of the entire population before recommending any further fluoride be added to them. And yet no studies have been done into your total fluoride intake here in Ireland in 35 years. It would be a very simple test to do, wouldn't it?
It would.
And yet it's never been done. So they don't know your total intake.
Well, it's like the, when I think what the first case of BSE was found in France, journalists were saying, well, why has this never been discovered before? And somebody just said, well, they never tested it for it before, but when they went to look for it, they found it.
That's right. You know, a funny remark that that Dr. Shishila came out with when she was in with Tessa Jowell, the British Health Minister, back in 98. Tessa Jowell sat there and listened to her 40-minute presentation showing harm to the whole human being. And at the end of it, she looked at her advisors who were sitting in the room, and they looked away. And nobody asked any questions, which was very dramatic, because they didn't have chemistry. And Dr. Shishila is a chemistry professor and a histocytochemist. And then Tessa Jowell piped up and she said, Dr. Shishila, if this is true, all this damage you've pointed out to us on bones and tissue, why aren't we seeing it in our fluoridated areas? And she says, you don't even have a lab anywhere in Great Britain that tests blood and urine for fluoride levels. If you don't look for the problem, how can you expect to find it? Ba-boom. Now, your health board dentists are going to say that fluoride is a naturally occurring substance, and that's true. But I could take you into the naturally occurring woods, and we could all eat naturally occurring wild mushrooms and be naturally occurring dead. Because something's naturally occurring does not mean it's good for us. There are a lot of things in nature like arsenic, lead, uranium, mercury, and fluoride, which are harmful. And there are really no safe doses of these things. To say something's naturally occurring doesn't really mean anything. It's more toxic than lead and marginally less toxic than arsenic, and like lead and arsenic, is a cumulative poison. So it's building up in your system, and it's not the one glass of water that causes you the damage, as it's not the one cigarette that causes you the lung cancer. It's the continuous small doses over a long period of time that build up and then cause the cancer or the health damage.
Yes.
So that's the same with fluoride.
Well, Walter, I greatly appreciate you taking the time and the energy out of your busy schedule to put all this knowledge down on tape, because I know you have vast resources. You've put a lot of time and energy into these things and continue to do so.
Mm.
On the behalf of many people that you will never meet, but they will actually gain without knowing it. And so hopefully that spiral of events will accumulate out, and your dedication will eventually come back in many ways, and I hope it does. And I greatly appreciate you taking the time, as I say, to educate me personally and the people who will have an opportunity of listening to this tape.
Well, thank you for inviting me here, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Walter, just before we finally leave the tape, you have a statement there you'd like to read.
Yes, this is by Dr. Albert Schatz. He's the inventor of streptomycin. And back in the Allende period of Chile, he was invited to find out why they had such a high infant mortality rate. And because he was the top doctor in the world at that time, and he knew Allende. When he went to Chile, he found within about 6 months that they were artificially fluoridating their water supply. And he told Allende to stop the fluoridation and the deaths would stop. They stopped the fluoridation and their infant mortality rate dropped. He was given a Pan American Prize for Medicine and so on. And he wrote up a statement. I just want to read one paragraph out. It says, artificial fluoridation of drinking water may well dwarf the thalidomide tragedy, which was dramatic because it produced crippled children who are living testimonials to what the drug has done. Many victims of artificial fluoridation, on the other hand, die quietly during the first year of their lives, or at a later age under conditions where their deaths are attributed to some other cause. When I put this together with Dr. Shishila coming from India and Dr. Hans Muhlenberg from Holland, and Dr. Robert Carton from the Environmental Protection Agency, and I see the quality of people who are saying these things, I can't be skeptical any longer. There's something's wrong here.
No.
They cannot all be wrong.
Well, the only thing people can do if they are skeptical and they are susceptible to fluoride is just simply stop the fluoride for 3 to 4 weeks and see if they make a difference, if it makes a difference in their lives.
Absolutely. It's a drug-free, cheap answer. And if it works for you, you'll know.
And I'm not aware of any doctors who would say, right, let's take this out, let's take that out, and let's do the other thing. They're much more likely to add something in the form of a prescription, a drug, or
that's right,
something similar.
And all drugs, I do pharmaceutical marketing, as you know, Jim, all drugs have side effects.
Right.
And some of them are horrendous in comparison to even what they're supposed to be masking. And because drugs are only given to mask a symptom,
yes,
they're never given to get rid of the cause.
Yes.
That would put doctors out of business.
Right. You mentioned something interesting there. Two other effects of the fluoridated water. One was skin irritation and rashes.
That's right. Skin rashes that don't seem to go away. Because this is hydrofluorosilicic acid, it actually can pass through the first layer of skin, and then it does damage under the skin, and it causes rashes that just seem to persist until you stop washing with this. The other thing it does is mouth ulcers. Very common.
Yes.
Mouth ulcers.
Yes.
You'll get that from your toothpaste, and a lot of people don't understand. But again, this is very acidic, and
yes,
it's doing a lot of damage,
yeah,
while it's in there, you know, under the skin surface again.
Yes.
So these are conditions that a lot of people normally get. It also lowers your renal clearance. You know, it actually does damage to the kidneys because all of this stuff has to be extracted from the water.
Yes.
Your body doesn't want fluoride.
Yes.
So it's actually actively trying to get it out of the water supply, and it has to be stored while it's waiting for you to excrete it.
Yes.
And over the course of a lifetime, it starts to cut down on your renal clearance.
So obviously it would have a burning or toxic effect wherever it's put into storage.
It certainly has a deleterious effect no matter where it's stored. There's nothing good about this product. And it is a non-essential element.
Yes.
If you didn't have any fluoride in your life, you would be a perfectly healthy animal, Jim.
And again, my special thanks to Walter Graham. Dara Hammond of Natural Life Health Limited has kindly offered to distribute this tape and make it more widely available. He can be contacted at 0404 62444. His website address is www.naturallife.ie. I would appreciate feedback that comes from this tape also for your own ideas, thoughts and comments. My website is www.stresscare.ie. My name is Jim Ronan. Thank you for listening, and be sure, give us the feedback. And again, we wish you good health, happiness and prosperity. Bye for now.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.